Thank you, DeRoy. First, a personal note. As a graduate student in economics at the University of Chicago in the mid-1950s, when I was a child, I was privileged to be a student of Milton Friedman. Although his research specialty was monetary theory, he regularly taught the first-year course in price theory, using the great text by Alfred Marshall and David Fan's notes of Friedman's prior lectures as texts. This was an exciting time to be a student at Chicago, where we sensed that Friedman was leading an intellectual revolution in economic theory, research techniques, and policy, a judgment later confirmed by the award of the Nobel Prize to Friedman and to several other Chicago professors and then graduate students of that time. Chicago economics was so distinctive during those years that some years later, a friend introduced me at a professional meeting by saying that Bill Niskanen has the best of both worlds, a Harvard degree and a Chicago education. We had numerous contacts over the years, as Friedman was a special friend of the Cato Institute, where I am the chairman. We learned of his death last fall during our annual monetary conference, when we had the sad obligation to tell Anna Schwartz of his death. Anna, of course, being the co-author with Friedman of his massive monetary history of the United States and his longest professional colleague. And the keynote address later that day, which had been scheduled some prior months, summarized Milton's major contributions to monetary theory and policy. So we both celebrated and were saddened by the news of his death on that day. Let me now turn to the major Friedman contributions to economic theory. He succinctly summarized the distinctive characteristics of Chicago economics in an address to the university's trustees in 1974, when that term, Chicago economics, was still often used as an epithet. In discussions of economic policy, he told the trustees, Chicago stands for belief in the efficacy of free markets as a means of organizing resources, for skepticism about government intervention in economic affairs, and for emphasis on the quantity of money as the key factor in producing inflation. In discussions of economic science, he continued, Chicago stands for an approach that takes seriously the use of economic theory as a tool for analyzing a startlingly wide range of concrete problems, rather than just as an abstract mathematical structure of great beauty but little power. For an approach that insists on empirical testing of theoretical generalizations and that rejects alike facts without theory and theory without facts, end quote. This perspective builds on Friedman's first major contribution to economic theory, a 1953 article on, quote, the methodology of positive economics. This article, very controversial at the time, challenged the perspective that theories should be judged by the realism of their assumptions. Friedman contended that the proper test of a theory is whether it successfully predicts conditions that have not yet been broadly observed, not whether the assumptions are realistic. This perspective, now much more broadly shared, was the first step toward transforming economics into a science. Friedman's most important contribution to economic theory may have been his 1956 article on the quantity theory of money, the definitive statement or restatement of the Chicago perspective on monetary theory. The primary testable hypothesis of this theory is that the demand for money is a stable function of a small set of variables that Friedman specified, an hypothesis that has been tested by many economists, including by Friedman and his students. Very important policy implication of this theory is that nominal income and the price level are primarily a function of monetary policy, not fiscal policy, as was the conclusion of the then-dominant Keynesian theory. An important related contribution to economic theory was his 1957 book on a theory of the consumption function. The primary hypothesis of this book is that household consumption is a function of expected or permanent income, not current disposable income, as in the Keynesian theory. This hypothesis has been thoroughly tested by Friedman and others. The primary policy implication of this theory is that temporary changes in government spending or taxes would have no effect on consumer spending, except among the poor and others who are liquidity constrained, a conclusion that greatly weakens the case for discretionary fiscal policy. Friedman challenged another tenet of the then establishment macroeconomics in his 1976 Nobel lecture on inflation and unemployment. Beginning in the 1960s, most macroeconomists assumed that there was a stable negative relation between inflation and unemployment that provided an opportunity for economic policymakers to reduce unemployment by increasing inflation. Friedman's hypothesis was that unemployment may decline with unexpected inflation, but has no relation with expected inflation. The testable hypothesis that he posed is that current unemployment is a negative function of the change in the inflation rate, but not of the level of inflation rate over time. And that has been confirmed by many tests. Ed Phelps last year received the Nobel Prize for similar research on the same issue at about the same time. Friedman observed that there seemed to be a positive relation between unemployment and inflation during the 1970s when they gave this address, but he expected that this would only be a temporary condition. In fact, there appears to have been a strong positive relation between the current unemployment rate and the lagged inflation rate for the past several decades, greatly reducing the concern that the monetary policy necessary to reduce inflation would increase the unemployment rate for more than a short period. Friedman's monetarist perspective has now become the dominant paradigm on macroeconomics in both the United States and around the world. As a consequence, the average inflation rate and the variability of demand in the past 25 years has been much lower than in prior years. Again, both in the United States and at least in the other industrial countries. Few people have ever made such a substantial contribution to economic well-being. Finally, what has been the relation between Friedman's major contributions to economic theory and his unusually broad contributions to economic policy? Not much, as it turns out. Only a few of his many policy proposals addressed macroeconomic issues, however important. Some of his proposals, such as for a negative income tax and for a monetary policy rule of maintaining a slow, steady increase of the monetary base, were best modified as they were either before or after implementation. One proposal, to reduce federal tax revenues in the hope that it would reduce federal spending by what he called starving the beast, was just plain wrong. Friedman was correct to maintain and update a broad menu of policy proposals without much regard for the focus of his professional work at the time or whether the policy audience was yet ready to address the issue. As a consequence, there has been little relation between the time a proposal was first made and the time that it may have been implemented, or little relationship between the proposals that were considered for implementation at roughly the same time. Friedman first proposed school vouchers, for example, in a 1955 article, but this proposal is yet to be broadly implemented, except as tests. The first Friedman proposals to be implemented were for a flexible exchange rate and for voluntary military, both in 1973, proposals that addressed very different issues and involved different types of argument and evidence. In summary, Milton Friedman was a powerful intellect, a stimulating teacher, a consistent friend of individual liberty and limited government, and the most influential economist of the past 50 years. Thank you.